Okay, so we haven't really discussed or taught much on the Hebrew, the priestly blessings. So this is what we're wanting to do today. Give a little bit of background of us as far as the priestly blessing is concerned. Is I had never even, other than the one time I read my Bible, actually read the priestly blessing before. Well, I guess we had done it back in some Torah studies. But when we, back in 2001, we went to the Feast of Tabernacles in Fir Point, Oregon, and held it with a group called the Omega Praise Fellowship. And while we were there, on the last day of the feast, what they did is they handed out a bunch of big tallits, and everybody got together in groups, and they put this tallit over them, and there's the guy that sang, he had a guitar, and he was singing the priestly blessing that we responded to. And it's the same priestly blessing that we've done here over and over again in the years past. And I was really moved by that, probably not as much by the priestly blessing itself, but of the responsive reading, because I began to see a little bit of value there in responsive reading. But that's, you know, we were able to use that here for a number of years as far as a way to do the priestly blessing. And I even remember one time then when Larry took a little bit of liberty with that, and you know how he just went,
he yelled it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that we have that liberty, and I thought that was okay and good. In fact, so anyway, we've been able to use that. But like I said, we haven't studied it that much. So today what I wanted to do is go through the priestly blessing and actually study it. And there's a number of things we're going to look at. We're going to look at the structure of the blessing, the content of the blessing, and the meaning of some of the key words to the blessing, so that we can get a little bit better idea, so that when we say the blessing before we go home, like it's our tradition to do, we'll know a little bit more about it. The priestly blessing is found in Numbers 6, verses 23 through 27. And basically goes like, well, this is it. You can see that there's three different portions to the blessing. There's a, actually the first portion is sort of a introduction to the blessing. It's not really the part of the blessing. And then there's the blessing itself right there in the middle. And then there's the instructions again for what should be done with the blessing and why you're doing it. And it reads, "And Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yahweh make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And so they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them." Well, verse 22 is the introduction, begins the introduction of this, verses 22 and 23. And there's a number of things that we can find out by analyzing even the introduction to the priestly blessing. First off is this word "and." Now, because it's "and," what do we assume the word, the Hebrew letter is?
Vav.
Is a vav, right. And we know that the vav connects one thought to another thought in many cases, right? What's the thought before the priestly blessing? Does anybody know? The Nazarite vow. So we should think that this priestly blessing is somehow tied to the Nazarite vow. Now, the Nazarite vow, a lot of people have questions about what it's all about, and I do too. I don't know for sure. But one of the assumptions or one of the thoughts about the Nazarite vow is that it was a way for a non, or for an Israelite, let's call him a common Israelite, who is not a son of Aaron, a descendant of Aaron, to actually participate in the priestly functions. That's just one view, and I don't know if it's true or not. So, if that's the case, and the Nazarite vow is tied to the priestly blessing, then that might be indicative that the priestly blessing would be for the Nazarites today. And we remember that our Messiah, Yeshua, is a Nazarene. All of these words come from the Hebrew root netzar. So maybe there's a connection in there for us today as far as the Aaronic blessing is concerned. There again, not quite sure about that, but that's a thought. But whatever it is, we do know that it's connected in some way to the Nazarite vow. The next thing we see is that God says, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Well, the Hebrew word there for this is the way is actually only one Hebrew word, and it is ko. It's a kaf and a hey. And what it talks about, or what it implies, is doing something pretty specific to what I'm saying. Not exactly, but pretty specific to what I'm telling you. In other words, God is not giving you blanket openness to say what you want to say. He's saying, this is my blessing. This is not your blessing, Aaron. This is my blessing. And so I want you to say these words for me. I'm not giving you license to say just anything. So this is the second part here of the introduction that we need to look at. Another point in the introduction is that the Aaronic blessing is to be given to the children of Israel. It's a blessing for Israel as a nation. And I had a discussion last week with Dr. Ward there in the church I went to last Monday, because it was the last day of unleavened bread, and I talked to him about corporate Israel. That if God does God deal with Israel on a individual basis, or does he deal with Israel corporately? And he agreed that God deals with Israel corporately. And I think that's true, because if we look at that, the history of Israel, even though there were people who stood out from Israel, they rose above, say, for instance, Joshua and Caleb, who rose above, they still had to go through the punishment that the rest of Israel went to. They didn't die in the wilderness, but they still could not just jump right back into the promised land. They had to wait the entire 40 years. We see that over and over again in the dealings with Israel. This is a corporate thing. God deals with Israel corporately, not necessarily individually. And I would say necessarily as a corporate people, and only rarely as individuals. There again, if you look over the 1500 years of Israel in the Bible, there's very few individuals mentioned. And usually they're only mentioned because they either rise above, like Joshua and Caleb, or they stay way below, like Jezebel. So Israel is a corporate people, and this prayer is intended for corporate Israel. Is that to say that we can't ever say the prayer outside of having all Israel present? Well, absolutely not. I don't think so, because I think this would also apply where Yeshua says, for where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in the midst of them. So I believe that it can be applied in, you know, to small groups ourselves, you know, like we do even here. One last thing in regards to the introduction, and that is that God gave the Aaronic blessing to Israel during the period of time that they were building the tabernacle. It was not given after they had been cast off, you might say, that first generation. So since they were still building the tabernacle when God gave the blessing to Israel, we can assume that the people that were to receive the blessing were people who were generally walking in the ways of God. I think that then it would be prudent for us to reserve the blessing, this particular blessing, for people who are walking in the ways of God. It may not be something you want to just give, pronounce over your Sunday keeping adulterous, homosexual, pork eater. All right?
Would that fall under the category of not casting your pearls?
That would probably fit pretty well. I would think that would be a very good one. So anyway, we might think about that if we were wanting to pronounce the Aaronic blessing over, say, some people, like in a wedding or something like that. Okay. So now let's look at the heart of the blessing. The blessing is made up of these three passages. Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yahweh make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. So we have three lines, and actually they are written in this way in the Tanakh, or in the Masoretic text. They actually have a somic at the end of each of these lines, and the somic is supposed to be a to separate them into individual lines. So they're written this way. Since they're written this way, then there's the question, is God saying that He's going to do six things for you, or is He only doing three things for you? Because if you look at this, there are actually six things listed. There is bless you, keep you, face shine upon you, gracious unto you, lift up the countenance, and then give you peace. You see the six things there that are, that God says He's going to do. But many people believe that there's only three. That there are He's going to bless by keeping. He's going to have His shining face. He's going to show His shining face as an outpouring of His graciousness. And that He's going to lift up His face, which is going to provide us peace in some way. So do you see how that could happen? The reason is because just as the vav is a connecting between two different thoughts, it can also be a connection of a continuation type thing. It's sort of like I could say I'm going to go to town, but more specifically, I'm going to go to Walmart. So it's you have a broad statement, then you have a narrowing statement. And that's another way that the vav is used. And many people believe it's that way, so that instead of it being an and, in other words, these two are, you know, just one, like we do an and, I'm going to the store, and I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to do that. It's more of a connecting thoughts together over here. So many people believe that. And one of those persons is a pretty good Hebrew root scholar. His name is Tim Haig, and I've talked to him. I have talked to him, but I read a lot of his stuff because he's pretty balanced, it seems like. But he makes this statement here in regards to the letter Vav. He says, the single Hebrew letter Vav often indicates the simple conjunction and, but it can also be understood in a continuative sense, meaning that is, making the second clause of a two-clause line function as a further explanation or amplification of the initial clause. In other words, he's saying the first word is general, the second word is more specific. It's basically what he's getting at. And so Tim Haig has developed a paraphrase of the actual blessing using his understanding that of the that is type clause. And the way it goes is this. Yahweh bless you, that is, may He keep you. Yahweh make His face shine upon you, that is, may He demonstrate His grace to you. And Yahweh lift up His face upon you, that is, may He give you true peace. You see how he applied that and how that came together? Okay. So, this is where he's at on this. And so, I'm going to use his understanding, because I think it is correct, and he's not the only one who teaches this. There's a number of people who teach it the same way, that there's actually three parts to the blessing, not six parts of the blessing. So let's look at each of these individual blessings and look a little bit more into them, and maybe we can get a little bit more insight into what's happening. First one is, Yahweh bless you, that is, may He keep you. Well, the first thing we want to look at on that is the word bless. The word bless, the English word bless, comes from the Hebrew word barak, a bet, rosh, and a kaf. And it actually means to bend the knee. Right? If you've ever seen Jewish people saying a prayer and they do this, it's because they are walking and they're actually performing what the word says, which is to bend the knee. And that's what I was talking about with my son, grandson David. I think David would enjoy every time in the Amidah, every time Jason were to say, blessed are you, he would do that, you know, because he could get some motion out of it. But the word actually means to bend the knee. So what do we think about when we think bend the knee? Well, if you were going to go up to a king or a queen then what you would do is you would bow down to them, right? In some cases, like if you've probably seen this on the movies, they bow down on their knees, you know, to the king, okay? They prostrate themselves to the king. And basically what they're saying is that I am of service to you. You know, I'm honoring you as the king and I am of service to you. The thing about this is that God is the one who's bending the knee in this case. So if God is bending the knee, what does that mean for us? Well, it's not that he's honoring us as being greater than him. It's that he wants to be of service to us. Now, we can think about that and can understand that if we think about the fact that we are in a covenant relationship with God. Because I'm in covenant with my wife, and my desire is to serve my wife and make her happy. We're in covenant with God. We are the woman figure in that two-part covenant relationship. And so God, as the husband, would want to serve his wife. That's why he gave us Torah. That's why he gave us all these things. Because he wants us to be happy. He wants us to be well off. He wants, you know, not have problems and all that stuff. He wants to serve us. So the thought there then is that when God is bending the knee toward us, he is wanting to serve us. The next thing we see in this blessing is that he wants to keep us. And the Hebrew word for keep is shamar, and it means to guard and protect. Guard and protect. We know what it means to guard things of God, don't we? God tells us to guard the Sabbath. So how do we guard the Sabbath? How do we keep the Sabbath? We keep the Sabbath by setting it apart. We keep the Sabbath by making sure we don't do certain things that we consider prohibited things to do on the Sabbath. That's how we keep the Sabbath. That's how we guard the Sabbath from being profaned. So it's our responsibility to guard. God guards us in a number of ways. He puts a hedge around us, as shown in Job 1. He provides for our needs, as shown in Hosea 2, verse 7. He fights our battles. He does a number of things for us so that he is taking care of us. So God, in this blessing, in this first portion of this blessing, what he is basically saying is that I want to serve you, and the way I'm serving you is by guarding and protecting you. To keep is to guard and protect. So this is an awesome thing when you think about it, that you've got the creator of the universe looking down upon you and wanting to guard and protect you. And that's what he does for his people Israel and for us. So there's a passage here that sort of helps us to see that. Psalm 5 verse 12 says, "For you, O Lord, will bless the righteous with favor. You will surround him as with a shield." So God's desire is to surround us, protect us. And what does he need to guard us from the most? Hasatan, the deceiver, the adversary. So it is his job to guard us from Hasatan. And as long as we're doing our part, he will do his part. Except in some cases where we need, like in the case of Job. Job needed some correction that he couldn't get any other way. So in those cases, God lets the shield down a little bit. But left to ourselves, we have no protection outside of Yahweh. Okay? All right, the second blessing is Yahweh make his face shine upon you. That is, may he demonstrate his grace to you. Well, let's look at the second word first here, the word grace. Grace or gracious comes from the Hebrew word hanan. That's a het, noon, and a final noon. And it means to show favor. So gracious and favor are the same basic word in the Hebrew, but we probably understand favor better than we do gracious. Because if we favor if we favor one son over another son, what does that mean?
Partial.
Well, we're partial, but that means that usually we don't favor one son over another son or one daughter over another daughter because, well, I dislike you more. It's usually because of their actions. It's usually because they're more like you. Maybe they take in, have more interest. They're interested in the things that you're interested in. That's basically why we would favor. Okay? So why would God favor us? He favored us for two reasons. Number one, because of a promise God made with Abraham. And secondly, because if we walk in His way, we're more in tune with His thoughts and interests. He has someone to talk to. You know, it's hard to talk to somebody that you have nothing in common with, right? So this is one of the ways that God favors us. And of course, He favors us for one reason, because we're His bride. And I think that's a good reason to favor somebody. I need to favor my wife before another woman, because she's my wife, okay? And that's the correct and proper thing to do. So how do we know, though, that God favors us? And this is part of the blessing. The way we know that God favors us is because His face shines upon us. Look at the passage again. Yahweh make His face shine upon us. That is, may He demonstrate His grace to you or to us. We understand or we know that He favors us because He lets His face shine upon us. What does it mean to let your face shine upon you or on someone? The way we can understand that is to look at the opposite. What the opposite of God's face shining upon us is God. I mean, the opposite of me looking at you, Larry, is to do what? Look away from you, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, if my face is shining upon you by looking at you and my face is turned from you, then I'm no longer shining upon you. We can understand what that means in the Hebraic context by looking at the opposite. And the opposite, one of the examples is this. Then my anger will be kindled against them. This is the blessings and curses chapter of Deuteronomy. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured. And many evils and troubles will come upon them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us, because our God is not among us. And if you continue to read on in that passage, he says again, he's going to hide his face from us. So, when God hides his face from his people, it's as if he has abandoned them. It's as if he's just setting them off to the side and saying, okay, you go your own way. All right? That's what it means. You're getting no help from me. You're getting no protection from me. But worst of all, you're not getting any friendship from me. I'm not going to be a friend with somebody who is opposed to me. And I think that's quite simple, quite understandable. So the opposite of hiding his face is to let his face shine upon us, which implies having a face-to-face contact with you, to walk with you and talk with you and converse with you and help you and stand by you like Jonathan stood by David and David stood by Jonathan. That's what is implied by letting God's face shine upon us. In fact, God's face shone upon Adam and Eve. If you look at Genesis 3, it says, and they heard the sound of Yahweh their God walking in the cool garden in the cool of the day, and the man and his wife hid themselves from the face of Yahweh Elohim among the trees of the garden. I would submit to you that when God spoke to Adam, he spoke to him face to face. And so there was this relationship that God had with Adam. We know that God spoke face to face with his friend Moses. Exodus 33:11. So Yahweh spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. So when God's face is shining upon us, we know that we are His friend. He is our friend. We can converse back and forth with each other. I can depend upon Him. He can depend upon me. These are various aspects of friendship and of having your faith or God's face shine upon us. And again, by having God's face shine upon us, this is how we know that He favors us. Because God doesn't let His face shine upon just anybody. He's only letting it shine upon those of us who are walking with Him. When God is gracious to us, it is because He favors us, and we know He favors us when His face shines upon us. And in Psalm 31:14, it says, I trust in You, O Yahweh. I say, You are my God. My times are in Your hand. Rescue me from the hand of my enemies and from my persecutors. Make Your face shine on Your servant and save me in Your steadfast love. So it's important for God's face to shine upon us. Okay, the final blessing is Yahweh lift up His face upon you. That is, may He give you true peace. Well, there again, in order to understand what it means to lift up His face, we'll have to look at what the opposite of that is. And the opposite can be found in this passage here in Genesis 4. Yahweh, you know the passage, Cain had brought a offering that was not an acceptable offering or not a complete offering to God. And God says to Cain, why are you angry and why has your face fallen? So instead of a face lifted up, his face had fallen. And because his face was fallen, we understand that he was angry, then we can make the assumption that a fallen face is to be angry with us. Fallen face equals angry. Pages turned here. So the opposite of a fallen face is to have a happy face, right? Okay. So God's face is smiling upon us. If we're pleasing God, God's face smiles upon us. And then we can have an inner peace knowing that all is well between us and God. Let me go to this right here. When God smiles upon His people, it shows that He is pleased with us and that we are pleasing to Him. When God's face shines upon us, it's when He is pleased with us, we can have and because He is pleased with us, we can have an inner peace, knowing that all is well between us, because God does not carry a grudge, just as we read today in the Torah. God does not carry a grudge. He's not two-faced, and He's always ready to forgive. And when God is pleased with us and we approach His presence in prayer, there is peace in His house. And so you might say there is shalom in the home. So it's on the third prayer third blessing of the three blessing benediction for God's face to shine upon us and gives us peace. It gives us an inner peace of knowing that we are pleasing to God. It's not this peace like you're never going to have an attack from an outside army or you're not going to have financial troubles or anything like that. It's a peace of knowing that you're pleasing to God and that God is pleased. I mean, He's there. He's always with us. You know what I mean? Okay. All right. So that's the three blessings there. Now, the Aaronic blessing ends with this. It says, so they shall put my name upon the people of Israel, and I will bless them. So what does it mean then to put God's name on the people of Israel and then He will bless them? All right. These three blessings are the blessing of God that is putting His name upon us. You can equate If you feel that you have, that you are receiving these three blessings that are listed here, then you should feel that God's name has been placed upon you. Because putting the name, putting God's name on you is not a magical thing. It's not a claim to special blessings, like, you know, you want a car, so I'm going to say the Aaronic blessing or something like that. And it's not, has nothing to do with the sacred name. Okay. It's not saying that, well, that, you know, the correct name was pronounced upon you. When you have received these three blessings, you will know that God's name is on you, because God's name implies the fundamental characteristics and attributes of God. Remember back there when God put Moses by the rock and then passed by him, and he says, I am these things, these 13 attributes. If you have those 13 attributes, it is because you are walking in the ways of God and God is blessing you. And if you have received this blessing, it's because you have the 13 attributes. If you see what I'm talking about. In other words, when we emulate God, then we have this blessing in our lives. And the blessing is what helps us to emulate God. It's sort of a two-way street. Angie's looking quizzical and puzzled over there. So, another thing about this is that, what is the role of the priest? Well, the role of the priest is they should teach Jacob the rules and Israel the law, and they shall put incense before you and the whole burnt offerings on your altar. The priest's job was to teach Torah. And if they taught Torah correctly, then all Israel, you know, if they had a humble heart, would be walking in Torah and walking in God's way, and therefore they could receive the blessing. If they did their job effectively, Israel would become more in tune with the Torah, which will in turn cause us to be more like God, and as we begin to display the attributes contained in His name, He becomes blessed by us and likewise bestows His blessings of protection, holiness, and peace upon us. So this is the role that the priest play in this. This is why it was given to the priest to pronounce the blessing, because the priests were in a way responsible for helping the blessing come to pass. If they taught Torah, the blessing could come. If they refused to teach Torah, then the blessings could not come upon Israel. When you are, if any of you do the Amidah prayer, one of the last blessings in the Amidah prayer is a summation of the priestly blessing. So if you are saying the Amidah prayer, you are in effect saying the priestly blessing on, you know, in so many words every day. This is the last benediction of the Amidah prayer. It says, grant peace, welfare, blessing, grace, loving kindness, and mercy to us and to all Israel, your people. Bless us, O our Father, one and all, with the light of your countenance. For by the light of your countenance, you've given us, O Lord our God, a Torah of life, loving kindness and salvation, blessing, mercy, life, and peace. May it please you to bless your people, Israel, at all times and in every hour with your peace. Blessed are you, O Lord, who blesses his people, Israel, with peace. So, when we rehearse the Amidah, the Aaronic benediction here, hopefully now we'll see a little bit more about the individual blessings, what the individual blessings mean, and how important it is when we see His face shine upon us, what that really truly means for the people of God.